The Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. I am so glad you decided to join me today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. In 2009, my guest co-founded and was director of analytics at Loudpixel, a successful social analytics company. But after many years, she realized it wasn't quite what she wanted. Today, my guest is an independent wedding and lifestyle photographer. In a market that most people struggle to make a living in, my guest has managed to build a business in a short period of time to where she works very part-time and makes a full-time living. This allows her to spend more time with her one-year-old daughter. She also runs an interview-based podcast for photographers called Photo Field Notes and teaches at Michigan State University's advertising department. Now, let's hack Ali Ciarto. Now, let me ask you a question. How many emails do you have in your inbox right now? 100? 1,000? 13,000? If your email is anything like mine used to be, well, then the answer is just too damn many. But here's the thing. Even though I knew I wanted to do something about it, I didn't really know how. I knew I'd miss something important if I just deleted them all. But there were too many emails to go through. So then I finally learned the secret. The secret to reaching inbox zero and finally taking back my email. It's called Sanebox. And I absolutely 100% recommend it to everyone. Sanebox sorts through your email and moves all the trivial stuff into a different folder, so the only messages in your inbox are the ones that you actually want to see. Really, the ones that you actually just need to see. And aside from removing all the junk so you can focus on messages that matter, there's this great feature called Black Hole. Move an email into that folder, and you'll never hear from that sender again. It's a good feeling. Because we could use more organization in our email life, we worked out a great deal for you, our listener. If you visit sanebox.com/hack today, they're going to throw in an extra $25 credit on top of the 2-week free trial. You don't have to enter your credit card unless you decide to buy, so there's really absolutely nothing to lose. Check it out today and let me know if you love the Black Hole feature and reaching inbox zero as much as I do. Again, that's Sanebox, sanebox.com/hack. And you'll get all of this for free and more. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and we have a brilliant guest today. Ali, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thanks, John. You're too kind.
All right, Ali, let's jump straight into this, shall we?
Sure.
Ali, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what the one thing is that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Sure thing. I think looking back, when I look at myself in my early vision of what I thought I would be when I didn't think I would be an entrepreneur, and then that point where I kind of diverged from my peers and actually became an entrepreneur and grew my company and then started yet another company and grew that company and have had pretty good success within, you know, both companies. I think that the difference started when I was actually working in corporate America, thinking that I would just work my way up one promotion at a time and this would be how I would go about my life and then make a nice salary and just be comfortable and that would be life. I think what I first realized was I started to raise my hand when other people wouldn't. I would take on opportunities when an opportunity would present itself. It's so easy to say, I'm not qualified for that opportunity. Somebody else will do it. They'll probably do a better job anyway. I'll just let it pass. But I just decided that even things that seemed a little bit over my head, I was going to take them on. And so I started to raise my hand to opportunities, and I started to build a lot of connections that way. The other thing that I did was I put my dreams out there. I talked about what I wanted to do, and I was out just having drinks with a friend, an old colleague, And I said, I was 24 years old, and I said, you know what? I actually think I would love to start a business of my own. And it seemed crazy. It was just, you know, a little bit, it seemed like everyone I had seen who had started businesses, and this was in, I was working in PR at the time. Everyone who I had seen who had started businesses was at least 15 or 20 years older than me in that industry. They had long-term experience, long-term client contacts. And I just kind of had this silly, seemingly silly little dream. But I told my friend that I wanted to start this business. And what do you know, within a week, she got in touch with me and she said, if you're serious, I have your first client for you. And it turned out that that client was a very well-known global client and a very good first contract in the multiple six figures that allowed me to quit my job within a few months and start the company with my then fiance and my friend. Now, the funny thing is, I actually had another friend who was kind of, I worked with her and she was kind of interested in this idea of starting a company at the same time with me. And when the opportunity actually presented itself, the difference between her and me was that I said, okay, sure, I'll meet with them. Let's do it. Let's see what happens. And she said, oh gosh, you know, I was just talking about it, but that's really scary. And I have this stable job and I can't possibly leave this stable job because that's too much of a risk. So I never really thought of myself as someone who was willing to take big risks, but I guess I take calculated risks along the way, little calculated risks that I'm not jumping into the deep end in a way that it could ruin my life if everything goes belly up, but I'm taking enough of a risk where the success that could come out of it or the benefits that could come out of it are pretty big, but the risk that could come out of it, you know, I always know I can land at least somewhat on my feet.
Nice. I love it. Let's go back a little bit there to this idea of raising your hand when others wouldn't, of being willing to try and do things, even if you're not fully sure of how to do it.
Yeah.
That's obviously an absolute necessary skill, or at least having the guts to do it is big in starting a business, obviously, because we don't know what we're doing. Nobody does until we do it. That's just how it works. Right. But is this something you've always had? Is this like innate within Allie, or is this something you had to sort of nourish and really push yourself to do?
That's a really interesting question. I think in some ways it was in me beyond, I didn't apply it to entrepreneurship, but I think it was in me. I was actually a really shy kid, and I, like in kindergarten, I wouldn't even talk out loud. I had this friend who was my translator and I would whisper to her and she would translate for me. So I was like, no risk at all. And I think because of that, I felt this need to go completely in the opposite direction as I got older and kind of really push myself and say, look, I can do this. I can do things that I didn't think I could do. And it started, I guess, in college. I volunteered to give the commencement speech at my university for my college in front of 10,000 people. Whoa. And the thought was absolutely terrifying to me. But I was like, you know what? You need to face the things that you're afraid of if you ever want to grow and move beyond them. So in that case, again, I didn't think that I was going to start my own business, but I knew that if I wanted to grow as a person, I needed to push myself and do things that other people wouldn't necessarily do. And I remember applying to do that and thinking, they're not going to pick me. There's so many people in this college. But they did. And, you know, it turned out, I don't know how many people applied, but I'm sure it wasn't that many, just maybe a handful. And so it was kind of that first realization that, oh, okay, if I actually just put myself out there, there's a good chance that people will respond. And then I actually started a podcast while I was in college. This was in 2007, I think. So podcasting was really not a big thing at the time. And I started just reaching out to people who were in cool careers. It was called the creative career. I started reaching out to people who had what I thought were cool careers. And these were like corner office, very well-known people, CEOs of companies and so forth. And I thought, okay, let's just see what happens. I was kind of that like happily naive young person who I guess just wasn't afraid of rejection. And lo and behold, some of these really powerful, successful people were like, sure, let's chat. And, you know, I went to New York and I was invited into offices to sit down with people who are crazy busy. And I still to this day don't understand how it happened, but it helped me build connections. But more importantly, it helped me realize that people, if you put yourself out there, are much more receptive and willing to, you know, I guess, provide opportunities than people might think.
Yeah. Isn't the famous quote something like 90% of success is just showing up? Like, and not just showing up, but it's really just, I mean, to speak in front of 10,000 people, you had to apply. And most people wouldn't. Most people wouldn't do that. They wouldn't. And then you had to beat all the other people, obviously, that applied. But it really, and like with your podcast, it's like the creative career. It's kind of, it just, you want to talk to these cool people you want to, that have these really great corner office jobs, and you just ask them and they will.
Right.
But I love it. It's such a great thing of just really not being afraid, I guess, of people saying no to you, and not being afraid of, I guess, even of with the 10,000 people, that kind of blows my mind. Like, just, I'm gonna, how hard can it be? I'm just gonna suck it up and do it. It's like, okay, well, that's.
Yeah. And it's almost like now, I feel like in some ways just being naive helped me, because I feel like now, even now I might be like, ooh, that kind of sounds scary. But I think I just, you have to realize that, I guess, rejection is out there, and yeah, it's going to happen, and embarrassment. I think it helps that I cheered at Michigan State. I was a cheerleader at Michigan State. And I think that truly, the fact that I had literally fallen on my butt in front of tens of thousands of people helped me realize that maybe the worst has already happened. I've already embarrassed myself, you know, fallen down, like skirt up, whatever, in front of all these people. I learned to laugh it off and realize that those things are going to happen and it's really okay. So I think that probably made me more comfortable with the whole concept, the whole idea, but yeah, you just have to get a few solid, embarrassing experiences and a few solid failures under your belt, and then whatever, it's no big deal. You can brush it off.
Best career advice ever. You just have to get a couple good, solid, really just bad embarrassments and you're good to go. That's
maybe
it.
Maybe some actual falling on your butt in front of people. That's ideal if you can find that.
When you think there's nothing worse that could happen, then you're golden at this point. That's
right.
I love it. Okay, so you told us specifically what it is, the one thing that you're really, really good at. Every blog post, every expert tells us the 80-20 rule: do 20%, get 80% of the results, do what you're good at, delegate the rest. Ali, can you tell us something in your business that you are absolutely not good at?
Oh, sure. We've all made our share of mistakes, definitely. I think, this is a good opportunity to talk about both things that I've struggled with and how I've overcome them, I think.
Awesome.
I definitely have looked at my weaknesses in running a business. And I think this is kind of silly as an entrepreneur, because sales is such a big thing. But I think that sales was something that I really struggled with early on. And again, it seems silly because I was able to sell this really big contract to start and then continue to sell these contracts at age 24 to these really big global companies. But I kind of felt like, oh gosh, this is just, I don't know, what is this, luck? How do I really replicate this? And so what I've done, and I think even public speaking, I kind of go through eras where one day I'm like, yeah, no problem. And then one day I'm like, oh, I can't do that. I'm not, like, what am I doing? So I have, over the years, hired coaches to help me with these things. I've hired a sales coach to, you know, get on the phone once a week and talk about, how the heck am I supposed to do this? Where do I start? What do I say? What do I do? And a speaking coach who, same thing, I would just get on the phone with him about, I think it was once a week or once a month. And we would just talk through everything, my issues and how to get better at it. So it doesn't have to be necessarily a paid coach, but I think having someone to talk about, maybe just even another entrepreneur, having those mastermind groups or support groups, or even just online sites like yours where people can talk back and forth, I think is really helpful for overcoming the biggest obstacles in running a business.
Coaches obviously are talked about a lot on the show because I think they do play a big, big role in people's success. How did you, or how do you now, is it different? Like, but how did you go about finding a coach, like a speaking coach, when you maybe didn't have connections and didn't know the right people.
Yeah. In my case, they were actually both of the specific coaches that I hired were people who I had met in just these random places. And so one was kind of a friend who I had met when I lived in Chicago, and I knew that she'd done sales. And I think it was the same thing for her. She'd put it out there, hey, this is what I do. And it was probably a good 2 years before I hired her, but she had put herself out there. I finally came across that need, and that's when I decided, okay, hey, I'm going to hire you. The public speaking coach, he was actually speaking in town. I went to see him speak through Toastmasters, which I've been a part of. And I just went up to him afterward and I said, hey, I really like what you're doing. What do you have? What kinds of opportunities do you have? And so we started, I think it was like a 6 month or a 1 year kind of phone coaching relationship at that point. So these were people, I guess I didn't necessarily seek them out, but I was open to the opportunities when I came across them, and kind of always kept tabs on who was out there, who I knew could help me.
Excellent. Toastmasters. Are you still part of Toastmasters?
I'd like to say yes. the one that I was going to meets really early in the morning. And once I had my daughter, the schedule became a little bit more difficult, but I still have my intentions to go back. I love Toastmasters. It's been one of, I think, the most useful things for me in terms of just getting comfortable speaking and also just being aware of how I speak. Simple things like not saying all the time, or realizing my little tics and my little quirks, and just getting better about learning to pause instead of saying as I'm going. It still happens, but I think it's gotten better. They've just been a really amazing group, and I can't recommend them enough for everybody.
Yeah, I love that. And I was part of Toastmasters, then I stopped going. And now when I ask people about it, nobody seems to be on the fence about them. They either love them or they're just totally not into them. But it feels like the people who aren't into them really haven't ever gone. They just...
I also have to say, you have to find the right group. When I moved to Washington, D.C., I had been a part of the group here in Michigan, and I immediately wanted to find another group. And I actually had to go through a couple of different groups before I found one that I liked. It's just, who's well-organized, how they're run. And so I think if you don't like Toastmasters and you've been to a meeting that you didn't like, I definitely encourage people to find another group and just try a couple groups until you find one that's the right fit and the right time for you, because that really makes a big difference.
Yeah, that's interesting. So they're not as cookie cutter as they try and be, where they're all the exact same.
They're pretty, pretty close, but they're all run by different people, and people are different, and people are different scales of organized. So it makes a difference.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay, so let's move to work. You have a really interesting sort of work sort of schedule and setup going for yourself now.
Yeah, I do.
So you were a co-founder at LoudPixel, and now you are doing photography through your own website, aliciarto.com. Mm-hmm. And you really don't have to work very much.
Yeah, well, I used to work a lot of hours running LoudPixel. And actually, part of the reason I was working so many hours was because I did start my photography company basically the same time as LoudPixel. So I would work all week working with these corporate America marketing people. And then on the weekends, I would put on I kind of call it my alter ego. I would be completely in a different mode, going to people's weddings, helping people, everything from the crying bride and the touching moments. It's just a very different mentality. So I was doing both for a little while. And then I actually, at one point I thought, okay, I can't do both. I need to focus. That's another kind of weakness I think I have had is I just love everything and I want to do everything. So I said, okay, I need to really focus. And I focused on LoudPixel for a year. And our company was actually, I'm going to make this story as short as I possibly can. Our company had an offer from our biggest client to be purchased. And we decided, kind of after looking into everything, that we didn't want to sell. And because we would be then going to work for them, and we didn't want to work for somebody else. And so we kind of also knew that at that point, that was going to be us needing to find a different path, because that was our biggest client. We knew that eventually we would want to kind of go separate ways. And so I then started focusing on photography again, and really realizing, I think my turning point with this, and I promise you get into the schedule part of it too, but I feel like I have to tell a little bit of the backstory.
Yeah, of course.
My turning point, I feel like, was when I photographed a wedding for a couple. The bride's father had terminal cancer. And so she called me one day and said, we need to move our wedding date up. Are you available on this day? We need to move it up a couple months because basically we don't think he'll make it to the wedding day. And that, being a part of that experience and photographing that wedding and just the emotions and taking these pictures that were going to mean I knew so much, and kind of realizing that across other work that I do, these photos are not something that's so fleeting. And I felt like the marketing was very cool and, you know, good money, but it all felt so fleeting to me. And what I was doing in photography, it felt just more tangible and long-term and meaningful. And so after that wedding, of course, we're all, you know, I'm crying behind the camera because there are all these really amazing, touching moments. And her father did end up passing away about a week before her original wedding date. And it was just this really, I don't know, it was just this, I guess, amazing experience to have been a part of that. And I knew how meaningful it was. And so then I really got into saying, okay, you know what, just looking at what I want out of life. And fortunately at that point I had the ability to choose. I didn't have to just choose one or the other because I had to, you know, I was financially in a good place to be able to pick what I wanted. And at this point, you know, my daughter was coming, she was born November, 2013. So basically into probably March, 2014, that's when I really made the switch over to focusing on photography. And it's pretty awesome, I have to say. And, you know, photography, I live in Michigan. So the main focus, there are definitely projects that I do in the winter. And I've done projects this winter, but the main focus is very much on the summer. And so I am able to work in the summer mostly. And even then, you know, put my daughter in daycare part-time. And I am working Saturdays because weddings happen Saturdays. They sometimes happen Sundays. So the hours can be a little bit different, but I'm able to still work a lot less than I used to and still make a full-time salary. So I don't know about you, but that's pretty much my dream come true. So
oh, that's
I'm
awesome.
Pretty happy with it.
So you're one of these lifestyle entrepreneurs now.
I guess you could say that, I suppose. Yeah. I mean, it's still, there are definitely days when it's a lot of work, but the winter, sometimes I'm just like, wow, I feel like I should be, and, you know, I'll focus on like the business and growing creatively and just kind of looking at the big picture. But sometimes I'm like, oh, should I be working more right now? I don't have to. And it's just, that's just the way it is.
It's interesting though, because I actually know someone and possibly two people that I've known that have been photographers for weddings and like you are, mm-hmm. and they struggle with it. You have it set up that you make a full-time living in a short amount of time. Obviously you've done something or you've figured something out about your business. Do you think you brought any of the, say, marketing or kind of positioning of a brand into a market that you can use to, I guess, probably charge more money for your services, like, and not have to struggle, not have to try and keep jobs going all winter because you don't make enough money in the summer.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It seems like such a struggling, hard business for people. And you're just like, this is awesome. This is great. Yeah, and it's brilliant.
There are a lot of people in that position. I think it's a couple of things. First of all, it didn't happen overnight. I started the business in 2010. And the intention at that point was always just kind of this side gig. It was always about the passion of it. It wasn't about the money at all. And so, you know, here we are in 2015, I've had a lot of years to grow the business. So when I actually kind of said, okay, Loudpixel isn't going to be my focus anymore, I had already been in business for quite a few years. And I think that that helped, you know, but most of the shoots that I do, I blog and I submit them to other popular blogs. So I've been featured in print magazines. I've been featured in very well-known national blogs. And I actually, now in my market, when people search for wedding photographers in Lansing, I come up on top. So that helps a lot. I get a lot of my clients from search. They're just searching for. So yeah, I think that my marketing background has helped. When I blog a wedding, I'll put it up in a blog post and I will mention the name of the venue. And then I still get a ton of inquiries for Chicago for this one particular venue that I photographed a wedding at, where my blog post just comes up at the top and people look at my pictures and they're like, yeah, okay. Like, they're just looking for pictures of what the venue looks like. And that's how they find me. And then, of course, when you're doing it for a while, you build your client base and they refer you to other people. And so that helps too. But I think that just keeping fresh content, blogging the weddings, coming up on search, that's done a lot for me.
Yeah, that sounds, I think most people would leave their business at taking the photographs and now getting them to the customer after that. And you take it that whole step further, which is really creates that network of, well, this job can now turn into two more jobs or three more jobs. That's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And at one point I actually decided to write a blog post that was just, I said something like the best places to do a photo shoot in the Lansing area. And I basically posted samples from a whole bunch of different shoots that I had done. And I noted the place of everything. And so when people are looking for either like Googling, where do I do a photo shoot in Lansing? Or they're looking for those specific locations for pictures, they find me. So yeah, I get a shocking amount of traffic from search. That's just been huge for me.
Excellent. Okay, we're going to end with, near the beginning, you said how earlier on you began to put your dreams out there and just tell people about them, and you found that they've worked for you. And we're early in a year, we're coming up on your season for your business. Do you have any sort of big dream of what you would want for your business this year?
Yeah, I think that I really just like, it's been really fun to just continue to see it grow. And I think it's been this kind of great organic growth. It's been really fun lately as I've been submitting to more places to see the work recognized. And I don't know whether that helps me or not. Maybe that's just an ego thing where I'm like, they like me, they really. But I think at the end of the day, it's really about the clients. If my clients are happy, I am so thrilled. Taking beautiful pictures and kind of creating this long-term memories that they have to take home with them. So I think the more clients that I can reach, the more fulfillment I get out of it. I just really, when I come home from a shoot or a wedding and it's gone really well, I'm giddy. I'm really giddy about it. So just continuing that and continuing to grow the business is, you know, you probably talked to, there are so many. And I've been, because of LoudPixel, I've been a part of networks that are people who are very much about dollar signs and growth. And I would always be asked when it was like measuring my success. I was being measured in how many employees I had, how much money we made, what our growth was year over year. And to be honest, I totally hated being asked those questions. And now it's kind of cool that I can measure the fact that, yeah, I make good money in it, and I make a full-time salary and I have a great lifestyle, but really it comes down to, I'm really happy. And that's, to me, that's what matters most. And, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs will say, well, I'll be happy when ... And then they continue to strive for this next big thing and working their butts off. And you do need to do that. You know, you have to put the time in, but you also have to kind of realize at some point that you need to stop just looking at the future and the goals and you'll be happy when, and you have to realize, you know, what will make you happy now?
That is a beautiful answer. And I think you're totally right. And I guess that's why I referred to you as a lifestyle entrepreneur, not because it means you can travel with your laptop and all that stuff. It's just, you're making your business sort of make you happy. Like it has to go around your life and the life you want to live. And rather than just exactly like, how many employees do you have? How much was growth this year? How much was all this? And I think sometimes we get stuck in that where we think that we have to always play that game and get more employees, get new offices, get all this. And all of a sudden you just have this job in this company that now runs your life. You don't actually control it anymore.
Yeah. I've met a lot of really successful entrepreneurs who the numbers, they look incredibly successful from a numbers standpoint, but when you really talk to them, there's just something, they know there's something missing. They're not fully satisfied. And I felt that way. I had a company that I would be speaking as this very successful young entrepreneur, and I was not quite satisfied with what I was doing. And now I think I can really say, hey, I'm happy with this. This is what I want to be doing.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay, Allie, we've got to talk in passing about your business. Can you specifically tell the listeners where they can go find out about you?
Sure thing. You can find me at alliesiarto.com. So it's alliesiarto.com. And pretty much find all my other projects from there.
Excellent. I will link to that in the show notes for everyone. So it's very, very easy to find. please go check out her blog and see what she's doing. And maybe there's something you can implement in your business to help it grow the way Ali has done. So Ali, thanks so much for your time. I truly, truly appreciate it. And please keep doing what you're doing, because it's awesome to hear you being so happy in your business.
Thanks, John. And thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
If you are ready to reach inbox zero, then you are ready for Sanebox. If you go right now to sanebox.com/hack, you'll get a 14-day free trial, plus you're going to get an additional exclusive 25% credit applied to your account immediately. Go right now and reach inbox zero with Sanebox, sanebox.com/hack.
Thank you so much, Ali. That was a lot of fun. It was great talking to you. And I know you sound so happy and content and not overworked anymore. And I really liked that. I guess if I would have got to speak to you 5 or 6 years ago during Loud Pixel still in its heyday, you would have been a lot more just high tension and I guess probably not quite as happy. And it's just great to see. It's great to hear. And I just thank you so much for the conversation. Ali is a smart, smart lady. She's done some amazing things. She has a very, very cool business. The kind of business that I really kind of love and aspire to. The very lifestyle-based business where she gets to... The business is for her lifestyle, not a business that totally takes over your life and you have no control over it. And I really, really admire that. Ali said a lot of smart things in our 25-minute conversation, didn't she? She did. She said a lot of smart things, but she said that one thing. One thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
It doesn't have to be necessarily a paid coach, but I think having someone to talk about, maybe just even another entrepreneur, having those mastermind groups or support groups or even just online sites like yours where people can talk back and forth, I think is really helpful for overcoming the biggest obstacles in running a business.
And that's the hack. Yes, 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 Ali. It is absolutely who you surround yourself with. It does not have to be paid coaches if you don't have access to them, but it definitely, you need to surround yourself with people that are ahead of you, people that when you think of where you want to be in 6 months or in a year, these people need to be where you want to be or beyond that and need to be able to pull you along and help you out with the mistakes they've made. And I've spoken many times about the power of masterminds and how valuable they are, how valuable they've been to me in this past year that I've been in one. And about a month ago, I opened up HTE Insider, and I opened it up as a free private group, and 64 people got in there in a couple hours after I emailed, and it was amazing. It's an amazing group that every day I get messages from people of just they're being helped so much. And I am going to open up more spots in it. It's completely free. It's you have to fill out a certain survey and you have to get, I guess, accepted by me. But after that, it's free. And it's just, it's an amazing place where you can go help others and people can help you. Anything you're struggling with or just stuck on. And it's just such a valuable, valuable thing. Not just HTE Insiders, but all groups. And it's hard for people to find groups. I appreciate that. And I know that from my own experience, that it is hard to find these groups. But I absolutely agree with Ali that it is necessary and key to you moving forward and becoming successful. So if you want to get onto the email list, hte.io will take you right to the landing page, or hacktheentrepreneur.com. Right at the top, you'll see a place to put your email address in there. Get on that email list. That is where I announce when HTE Insiders opens back up, and I'll probably let in another 25 or 50 people in the next go. I want to do it just sort of incrementally so that I can keep control of it and that I make sure that it's a super, super valuable place and it's not just a wide open place where anybody can just kind of come and go. I want people that want to be in there and want to give back as well as be helped along in their journey. So this has been a lot of fun. I want to thank Ali one more time, and I want to thank you for stopping by and spending the time with me. I truly, truly, truly do appreciate it. And I know there are a ton of podcasts out there, but there's only one Hack the Entrepreneur, right? But no, seriously, I thank you so much. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.